I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to another episode of FFS, another Brexit podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Amanda. This was not a good week, really, for all concerned about British politics. It was the week that Boris Johnson fulfilled his lifelong ambition and became our Prime Minister. So we're here to try and help you through these genuinely quite difficult and depressing times.
Yes. Joining us this week is Tara O'Reilly, a Labour activist and staffer who has written broadly about the state of British politics.
From mental health to sexism faced by women in Parliament, Tara is not afraid to speak out against the injustices within the system. And as you can imagine, she was less than impressed by Boris Johnson's election as Prime Minister.
But before we speak to Tara, there's a lot more to catch up on.
So what a week. If you thought Boris Johnson becoming Prime Minister was the worst thing that could possibly happen, you would quickly have been proved wrong with his cabinet reshuffle, the absolute purge of the previous cabinet. One of the most vicious and wholesale reshuffles in modern politics certainly raised some eyebrows.
Yeah, to say the least. I am certainly consoling myself because Theresa May, I think, has a good shout for being one of the worst, if not the worst, Prime Minister this country has ever had, I think. I think pushing David Cameron for worst Prime Minister tag. But now we've got a clown as Prime Minister who has Priti Patel at the Home Office and Dominic Raab as Foreign Secretary. I'm just going to say that again. Priti Patel. Priti Patel as Home Office and Dominic Raab as our Foreign Secretary.
It is hard, and obviously it's a podcast that people can't see. But we are both smiling because it is just so hard to get your head around the fact that people like that now have influence.
Dominic Raab.
Jason is not impressed. Well, one piece of good news, I genuinely think, is that Chris Grayling has finally gone.
Which is amazing. Cabinet,
which is, and I think we should see this as like a good day for our country in general. And after kind of somehow surviving like 7 years in cabinet, the incomprehensibly incompetent Brexiter has finally had his hands moved away from the levers of power.
Yeah, it's great. Every cloud has its silver lining. I am going to miss being able to blame lots of stuff on Chris Grayling, though.
I think we still can.
Yeah.
I still intend
to. We should. But also, Priti Patel.
But the good people of FFS did not stand by. We did not stand by idly as Mr. Johnson arrived in Downing Street.
No, we didn't. Volunteers from FFS and the rest of the People's Vote campaign bravely battled both the heat and various law enforcement bodies in order to make our voices heard.
Yes, and some pretty good helicopter shots on Sky and BBC captured our huge Sky banner, delivering the message straight into the houses of millions.
Yep, and outside the Queen Elizabeth Centre, we had the pleasure of being led in pro-PV chants by Anna Soubry as Rachel and Joe Johnson looked on approvingly.
Oh, Joe Johnson. Throwback to the days when he was on our stage backing a people's vote with Gary Lineker.
Do you remember when we liked Joe Johnson?
Yeah, not anymore. Anyway, so let us not forget that there is a world outside Brexit.
Is there?
Yes.
You keep saying this to me and I feel like you're lying.
I seem to have lost you. There is. I know it encompasses all of our lives, but no, there is a world outside.
No, there is. There is. It's a world that's getting hotter and I don't like heat, Amanda. It makes me sweaty. Oh,
that is disgusting.
Yeah. Temperatures on Thursday soared to 38 degrees, making it the second hottest day on record.
It's fair to say that a Prime Minister who's already got quite a busy in tray, the climate crisis is certainly going to be one of the most pressing issues for them to handle.
Yeah. And while the rest of the world is working on it as one of the most pressing issues of our time. What are we doing? We're wasting millions of pounds of public money on no deal, preparing for no deal, warning the country about no deal, rather than tackling climate change.
Wouldn't it just be great if there was a multinational body that had the power and wealth to make a difference on climate change?
I can't think of an international collaboration that could make a real difference. I wonder if there is one.
Shame about that.
So yesterday, FFS joined the rest of the People's Vote campaign at a big rally at Birmingham. We're in the Great Hall at the university showing our support for a People's Vote.
It was genuinely an excellent event. I was very happy to be there. And other speakers who were there were football commentator Clive Tildesley, Labour MP Jess Phillips, and the star of last week's podcast, Lord Michael Heseltine.
Interesting fact. This isn't going to be interesting. I play a lot of football. Whenever I score a goal, I think of either Martin Tyler or Clive Tildesley commentating about my goal, saying how great it was.
You're right, that wasn't interesting.
Yeah. fair. Izzy Daly, one of our very own, was on the stage at the Great Hall in Birmingham. And as ever, she smashed it.
Absolutely smashed it. And if you want to get involved in any of our upcoming events or big rallies, or of course, a huge march in October, head to our website or the People's Vote UK website to see what's going on.
Yeah, definitely. And also, this is a final week of our crowdfunder. So we are raising money to get to 100 universities and colleges over September and October to speak to students and young people and get them all fired up about pushing for a People's Vote and fighting against no deal. So please do give us some cash money, because that helps us do good things. Doesn't it, Amanda?
It does. It does indeed. It's going to be a very busy couple of months. But any donation is very much appreciated. And if you can't donate, just please, please, please share the link from our social media.
Yeah. But better to donate, right?
I mean, yeah, but you know, okay, that's what are you doing?
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So now we welcome Tara O'Reilly. Tara is the coordinator of the Labour Tribune Group in Parliament, won the 2019 Trailblazer Award for the Young Women's Trust, is smiling as I say that, which I quite like, and sits on the Board of Trustees for the human rights group Peace Brigade International UK. So welcome, Tara. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So our first question is the question that we always ask every guest. Who is your FFS award? So the individual or group of people on the Brexit front who have done something ridiculous?
I think I'm kind of biased because I also kind of adore her, but and most of my Labour friends hate me for saying that, but I think Priti Patel for saying that people are only allowed to come here if they speak English after Brexit. Like, what the hell is that all about?
I missed that. Did she say that?
Pretty much, yeah.
She wrote in the Daily Mail. Did you not see? She wrote in the Daily Mail a big article about how, like, if people wanted to, I can't remember the exact how it all works, but something like, if people want to come here, they have to have like a job offer. But then like two paragraphs later, she was like, we're going to have an Australian based point system. And the whole point of that is you don't have to have a job offer to come here. So personally, I think that's quite a good answer, because I spent the weekend on Twitter raging about Priti Patel.
Complete shambles. Well, yeah, thank you. Great answer.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, so yeah, no, pretty good answer to that one. So many of your articles have focused on the difficulties that you or your friends kind of have faced as working class women in Parliament. And we at FFS are obviously quite interested in class and gender, as well as how like marginalised communities interact in politics, and obviously for us kind of particularly within the Brexit debate. And do you think underrepresentation is a particular challenge in the entire Brexit discourse?
100%. I mean, like, I come from a working class background, and I voted Remain, and so did the rest of my family, and so did the rest of my mates. And I grew up in inner city London, where, you know, we grew up in tower blocks, and we were next to, like, you know, the richest areas in London, in Westminster and Kensington. And for us, it was normal to be working class and a Londoner. But I feel like the Brexit discourse has always been, you know, the only working class that I've spoken about are, or the only people who are considered to be working class are ones in like small towns and ones that aren't outside big cities. And actually, I feel like, you know, there are working class people in cities who, you know, voted Remain and want to remain and aren't leavers. And yeah, I feel like there's a really diverse group of people who are just completely missing from the debate. And like, I still want to remain, but when I, you know, listen to Brexit debates and I hear, you know, really posh people on TV talking about why we need to remain, like, I know it, it frustrates me, because I'm like, oh my God, you don't get it. Like, you don't, like, you don't understand, you haven't made any effort to understand why, you know, these communities did vote to leave. So yeah, I don't think the Brexit debate is very representative of people. Well, you kind of terms of gender, class, race, all of it. It's just, it's quite dull. It's quite dull. No offense to you guys. You're great.
No, that's why we set up. So we're with you.
That's fair. I mean, you touched on one of the questions I was going to ask, which is the extent to which you think the People's Vote campaign is addressing that issue. Do you think the PV campaign is helping to push underrepresented groups, or has it still got a problem?
I think it's doing more than most, I'd say, but I still feel like there are voices missing, you know, like working class, BME people from, you know, cities and that kind of thing. Yeah, I think there's still a long way to go in terms of making the People's Vote campaign like representative.
I always think that's quite an interesting one, because I think, and you guys have seen this, hopefully, is that I can be quite critical of some of the like really senior figures in the campaign who like make those decisions. But then on the other side of that, I definitely see the problems they have when it comes to like getting those voices into like the media. And sometimes they'll kind of sit there and be like, you know, it's quite a hard thing to come back at when they're like, you know, we could put all these press releases out with just young people on it, but realistically, it's not going to get released into any press. Or we could put it out with Gary Lineker on it and suddenly we'll be on the front page. And you can kind of see why some of the senior management of the campaign, I think, really struggle with that, because I do think their hearts are in the right place for most people. But yeah, I don't know, like, I've gone back and forth on it like quite a lot recently.
It's a wider issue with how the media works, though, isn't it? It's just, you know, the media is always, has always been, you know, not representative of, you know, the average person. And that will always play into how, you know, the kind of voices you get from campaigns like the People's Vote. So,
yeah. The difficulty I have as well is I always cringe whenever you see a Tony Blair type.
Oh my God. Every time he comes out, it's just like, it's just a collective cringe.
I think the arguments he's making is strong, but his brand is so toxic. But the difficulty again for the leadership of the PV campaign is they have no control over Tony Blair. If Tony Blair wants to go and do an interview on Sky, he'll go and do it regardless of whether we think it's a good idea or not.
I mean, we've got like a great press team, but the idea that he needs them to get onto like
exactly.
the Today program is almost a bit laughable, isn't it? But you know, we're still the ones that'll get hammered for it.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
It's what it is sometimes, I suppose.
It is what it is. I like
great expression of the day for me today. So you're kind of a wider analysis of the People's Vote. So you've been not like very anti, I would say, but like quite sceptical, I think quite reasonably. And I'm just quite interested in like where you've come from and what you maybe think over the last year of the campaign.
I think the People's Vote has come like an amazing way. Mm. Like it's come really far, you know, since the referendum have is it 2 years, 3 years ago?
Oh my God,
it feels like it was just yesterday, but also it feels like a million years ago. Like, I think it's done really, really, really great things, but I'm also like quite skeptical of having a people's vote, less so than before. I'm on a slow, slow journey. But because I think a lot of people who support a people's vote or say they support a people's vote, whether that's in like the official campaign or MPs or, you know, activists from across the political spectrum, I feel like what they're really saying is, I want to remain, but I just can't come out and say it. And so it feels quite disingenuous a lot of the time. Like, I know when my mum listens to people talking about having a second referendum, like, she voted remain. She wants to bloody remain, but, you know, she's very much like, no, we already voted. Like, we just got to get on with it now. And then when she hears people saying, oh, you know, we're going to have another referendum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, she finds it really disingenuous, because she's just like, no, actually, that's not what you're saying. What you're saying is you want to remain, but you're just not actually saying it. And I think that's definitely how I feel. And I think that's how a lot of other people feel too, that actually, like, a lot of people who say they want a people's vote actually want to remain, but they're not making the case for it. And, you know, if there is a people's vote, the case for leaving has been made every single day, every single second for the last few years, but the case for remaining hasn't really. It's kind of been lost. So that's my main skepticism.
Skepticism. In fairness, it's a hard word.
I wouldn't say it.
I try and avoid saying that word as much as possible. But if the PV campaign came out and was all guns blazing, look, we are a remain campaign, we want a referendum in order to remain, would that make you more supportive of the campaign?
100%.
Oh, interesting. 100%.
Would it? So I think I'd be less likely to be involved. Yeah, I think it's just like, because having, I think, watched some of like my mates who are still in Cornwall and have been there since like before the referendum as well, I've seen them kind of go on like a bit of a journey. A lot of them went from like leave to, oh, okay, maybe actually this isn't going to give me more control over my life, for, you know, whatever reason they had for voting leave. And I think if I was working on like a campaign that was just out and out remain and had been since the referendum, a lot of them would very much go down the like, Amanda, you're just like a sore loser kind of thing. Like, let's just chill and go to the beach and do something else. But because I've kind of been plugging away at the more like, actually, you deserve a second vote because of X, Y, and Z, a lot more of them are kind of like on that journey. I actually think I'd be less likely to work for the campaign if it was like an out and out remain campaign.
That's interesting.
Richard's nodding as well. But doesn't have a microphone, but I feel everyone deserves to know. Richard's nodding too.
Richard, who's producing this, is nodding furiously. But I think the argument that you just made, Tara, that the case for remain as a result hasn't been made as strongly as it should have, is, I think, is a fair one. And it's how do you balance that, right? Because on the one hand, you have to make it democratically legitimate to have another vote, which is what people's vote is trying to do, right? Okay. Regardless of where you are on the spectrum, you deserve a final say. But on the flip side, that means that you're not spending as much time making the remain argument, and then, you know, there's tensions with that too. So it's a tricky one. I think I'm with you there. I think that you've got to legitimize a vote. And then once you've legitimized it, then you make the case. But I can understand definitely the argument that, you know, remain is not being pushed as strongly as it could be as a result. It's a tricky one.
I think people can work, like, I agree. I think you need to make the case for actually having a vote. But then I think a lot of the people who kind of hide behind wanting a second referendum, whether they, you know, call it a people's vote or not, I think some of them need to, you know, stand up and be like, actually, I'm going to, you know, campaign for remain, and, you know, say it with my chest and actually be like, you know, I'm going to start an actual campaign to remain. Because at the moment, if a second referendum does happen, the case for remain just has not been made whatsoever.
Do you think we would win?
I still don't think we'd win.
Really?
I still don't think we'd win. Yeah. Because the case just hasn't been made.
Well, okay. So then, let's dive into that. If a second referendum is going to be won, then obviously Labour are critical to that, right? Because, you know, you can't have the same status quo type argument that was made back in 2016. Labour have to be the one saying things can be different inside the EU. What's your take at the moment on where Labour is right now? The journey that it's gone on, the extent to which it needs to continue to move. What's your...
It's been a slow journey, but I think we're in a good, it's been very slow, but I think we're in a good place now. Yeah, I think there's still a long way to go. And
do you think we're in a good, because I guess my challenge back would be the last week hasn't been great, right? From the taking on Boris, to still the kind of uncertainty, John McDonnell saying, well, maybe we'll look at Boris bringing a Brexit deal back and then assess it.
Yeah, it's, I think the discourse coming from Labour is often very confusing. It's, and I say that as someone who works like at the heart of it in Parliament. Yeah, the way I kind of, you know, handle left-wing politics at the moment is just like step by step and bit by bit. And, you know, yeah, we're slowly getting there. I realise that's not all articulate, but...
I think it's how a lot of people feel, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really put as much... I used to really invest, like, my energy and my emotions and, you know, my entire sense of self in, you know, the Labour Party. And I still, obviously, I'm really tribal with the Labour Party, but, yeah, I kind of just take it day by day now with where we are with policy and Brexit and that kind of thing, because everything is just so, so, like... messy in Parliament at the moment. And you know, not just with Brexit, with like the sexual harassment and bullying and all these kinds of things, just the way Westminster works is just insane. So yeah.
Do you, to what extent do you think that kind of slowly approach, I think it's fair to say it's damaged Labour to a certain extent.
Don't hope, like, did you see the results of the local elections in the Euros? Not a certain extent.
Yeah,
like,
I'm trying to be measured.
No, I know, but I mean, like, we also have to be realistic. Yeah, that was some of their worst election results in the European elections.
No, you're right. Okay, like, okay. I mean, it's properly fucked you up. So
don't say you, not Clara. Jason, what are you doing?
I don't know where the middle line is here. So the challenge is, if you keep taking that kind of softly approach, then there's the danger that, you know, you'll suffer even more to the Lib Dems, who are very clear on their Brexit line, you know, working class Leave voters who, you know, look at Boris and think he's acceptable.
Just for the record, I'm like nodding aggressively to all of this.
but to the extent that you agree then, so what would you, if you were in the leader's office now, what would you say?
Come out for Remain, man. Like, and, you know, yeah, campaign for it hard. None of this wishy-washy kind of, oh yeah, you know, we'll support second referendum at some point, and who knows what will happen if we're actually in government and all this kind of stuff. Like, it's not enough. It's not enough. And, you know, as like the official opposition, I think we're doing a disservice to like democracy and the people who voted, you know, for Labour and who will continue to vote for Labour, if we're not actually standing up and saying, you know, actually Brexit is bloody awful and we don't want it to happen. And, you know, we can't just sit back and let it happen. But the likelihood of that happening is, you know, not as strong as I'd like it to be. So
we should email this podcast to Seamus and Carrie. Just like this clip. What do you think?
I think that'll go down quite badly. To be honest. But it's interesting though, because we were saying earlier, weren't we, like the case for Remain hasn't been made properly since 2016. And, you know, people kind of have like different opinions and stuff on that. But realistically, and it's that line that Matthew D'Ancona wrote in The Guardian that I can literally never get out of my head, which is like, you don't hear Democrats talking about a migrants first wall in America. And the fact that you had the Labour Party talking about a jobs first Brexit, which if you think about that now and actually reflect on that, that is literally just not something that exists. And they've got all this like horrific rhetoric around like stopping freedom of movement, and like they're really playing into like the right wing kind of stuff around immigrants and stuff. And I just think, if you say nobody's been making the case for Remain, I just honestly think that's a space that the Labour Party should have been filling since June 25th, 2016. And they should have been doing it like proudly, saying it with their chests and like...
Agreed.
Yeah. I don't think people realise quite how bad it's going to hammer the Labour Party electorally for years, like years and years. And you saw the Welsh poll yesterday. Like, you know, that's not going very well for them, is it?
No. Labour behind the Tories in Wales.
Yeah. But so I think it was quite interesting that you said... they should like come out for Remain in terms of like actually vocally start saying it, but they should also like campaign for Remain. Are you saying that because you don't think they did that in 2016? I know there's quite like a big...
I think it was
bit there.
Half-hearted, what we all did in... You know, I worked for the Labour Party over Sadiq's election, but then also for the little bit left in June and before the referendum. And we all kind of... anyone in or around Westminster, we completely took that referendum for granted. And I don't think a lot of the people who, you know, half-heartedly campaigned for Remain would you know, make the same mistake again. But yeah, I think we need to actually campaign for Remain.
I think it really gets to me, because, you know, if Jeremy Corbyn came out tomorrow and was like, cool, the full force of what I can do as a person, despite his slightly damaged reputation now, but like what he could get from Momentum and all the different trade unions and the staff, like the, you know, a Remain campaign or a Stay and Reform or whatever you want to call it would be as different to 2016 as it's almost possible for a campaign to be. But I just have absolutely, I'm still like working on all the Labour Party stuff, but I still have absolutely no faith that that's ever going to happen. And I don't think I'm alone in saying that.
Are there any MPs who really impress you at the moment in terms of the case that they're making for Remain? And
I mean, I work for 90 of them, so I'm biased, whatever I say.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to reel their names off? Give a shout out.
How quickly can you say 90 names? Yeah.
If you had to pick one or two people.
Yeah, and annoy the other 88, 89.
Who'd you go for? Who's been impressing me? God, it's hard. Is it really cliche and really bad if I actually, like, my boss, Clive Efford, has said multiple times in the chamber, I think, that might be a lie, but he said it at least once.
I love that. I might be talking nonsense, but I'm going to keep going.
I mean, he talks about it a lot, so I'm pretty sure he said it more than once about revoking and remaining. So he's like going hard on it, but it's, you know, lost in discourse. So I respect that. I rate that, not just because he's my boss. Slightly because he's my boss, but, you know, not fully. God, I don't know. I can't really think.
But that says
in terms of like,
right,
Brexit discourse, I can't really think of anyone where I'm like, oh my God, yes, you're really leading the way. Like, I think different people are doing like different things and filling different voids. Like what Lisa Nandy does and says, I don't think she speaks for everyone, but I think she definitely, you know, when she talks about working class communities and towns, and the same with Yvette Cooper, I think they do a really good job. But then, you know, there's loads more space to be filled, which I think is still quite void.
Yeah, because you need both the, like, the Lisa Nandy and the David Lammy. Like,
yes, and they work so well together. Even if they disagree, it's, you need argument and you need like healthy discussions.
Yeah, but I just want to pick up on something, because you said about Clive, like, talking in the chamber about revoke. What's your thoughts on the idea of just revoking?
Oh, I'm so here for it.
Are you?
I'm so here for it, just revoke and remain.
I'm actually slightly shorter. I'm genuinely surprised.
I'm so here for it.
Like, I couldn't be more anti-revoke. Unless we were going to like leave tomorrow with no deal and, you know, again,
it was the only way,
like,
to stop
there'd be
chaos.
No food for my mum and dad in Cornwall,
but
on
that's
Monday.
That's still likely, like that we're going to have no deal. Like, I'm not like,
I just don't think
tomorrow,
I could say
but...
I was pro-revoke. Yeah. I don't know, maybe I could. I don't think I could.
I just think, like, we struggle with the anti-democratic argument with the people's vote. I think you go revoke and that's like, you're going nuclear.
Yeah.
So I quite rate you for saying that, actually. I rate anyone who's just like, I don't care. Stop this shit. Yeah. I quite rate it. But I don't think I could support it.
That's definitely fair enough. So we've got just a couple of minutes left. So if we were thinking beyond Brexit, which I know can be quite hard to do, one in general, but two if you work in politics.
Oh, what is this question? Is there anything beyond Brexit?
Anyway. but divisions like caused by Brexit are now kind of like so entrenched, it's actually hard to see how the country can come back together again. And I mean that both on like a one-to-one kind of people in their families level, but also in terms of like our politics, because it has gone right to either end of the spectrum, really. And I'm kind of personally not too hopeful that Mr. Johnson will succeed in his task of uniting the country. Great. But if it was you, like, what steps would you take? Apparently you'd start with revoke.
Revoke.
It's an interesting first step.
Yeah. Oh my God, I sound
like, I'm going to unite the country. The 52% of you
crazy.
Lot are wrong and mad. Let's go.
I'm going to come to regret saying that, aren't I?
I love it. I'm here for it.
So steps to like reunite the country.
Yeah, to kind of bring people back and try and bring people more together than they were before 2015, 2016 as well.
It's hard because it's that thing where it's like, it drives me mad because actually we... You know, despite, you know, when working class people vote, the working class people who voted to leave and the working class people who voted to remain, like, you know, when I think about my friends and then I think about, you know, the people who someone like Lisa Nandy will speak about in small towns, like, we're on complete opposite sides of this debate, but we have so much more in common.
Yeah.
And it's definitely. That thing, it's, you know, it's that Joe Cox quote of, you know, we have more in common than which divides us. And it's so true. And I would really, really, really try to I feel like political discourse at the moment and how the Westminster bubble operates is that we always focus on, you know, what's different. We always focus on the divisions. We always focus on, you know, what we don't agree on. But actually, more often than not, we agree on, you know, things. Do you know what I mean? It's like our core values a lot of the time are the same.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the Prime Minister and politicians on the left and right really need to actually remember that and remind people that, you know, I don't know, things aren't as bad as they seem. Do you know what I mean?
It's like, that, you know, people in Hackney and Hull, you know, the issues that you're facing are actually pretty similar. It's housing, it's healthcare, it's good schools, you know, you care about the same stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
I'd focus on that. It's a bit wishy-washy and a bit like unicorns and rainbows, but
No, I like it.
It's hopeful at a time when politics feels depressing.
And you need
depressing.
Hope. Otherwise, we will not get out of, you know, the mess we're in.
I like that. I like that. We're often too cynical on this podcast.
It'd be difficult though, wouldn't it? Like, I know I'm now taking on the cynical role this week, apparently, but like it would be difficult to, you know, actually like practically start that in the population because, you know, like Dad and I literally can't have a conversation about anything at the moment without it coming back to Brexit and the fact that we fundamentally disagree on what is essentially just a means to an end because we both think different ways will make our country and our lives and our family like better. Yeah. So even if we're talking about anything at all, it comes back to that. So, I mean, I think we all just need to, like, I agree with like the aim, but I think like the time scale, we need to be very realistic about like how long it is going to take for our country to even start to get back towards people amicably disagreeing, basically.
Politicians need to start with it though. They need to lead and they're not. Yeah. And that's the thing. We need that leadership. Like the country will always follow what, you know, the standards that Westminster sets. And if we continue to have this really divisive, aggressive, abusive way of handling politics and arguments, then, you know, the same thing is going to happen at dinner tables until, you know, politicians stop doing that. So,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I agree.
Definitely.
Completely agree. Well, thank you very much, Tara, for coming onto the podcast. It's been great to have you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm so sorry we're so giggly. I think we should start like pre-warning people about what coming on this podcast actually means. But anyway, and thanks to all our listeners. Again, please do share our podcast. Talk about it very loudly in public places, on public transport.
What does that
everywhere.
Mean? Just on the bus. Ah, the podcast, the FMS podcast. Listen to it. I like it.
Yeah, why not? And then obviously, once you've done that, give us a great rating on iTunes and all your other favourite podcast stores. Tune in next week for another week of FFS, another Brexit podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.